This week on the Vital Masculinity Podcast, we have another interview for you, this time with Josh Hatcher of Manlyhood.com. Josh is a great guy, and Steve and I had a lot of fun chatting with him the other night. Maybe a little too much fun. Nah, I'm just kidding. But check out his stuff at Manlyhood.com, because he has a lot of great content there, and I've been enjoying it myself, and I think you will as well. In this interview, we discussed everything from conspiracies to clowns to coronavirus to pornography, so we were all over the place. But I think you'll find a lot of great insights in this interview and also find it quite enjoyable. Josh, thanks for joining us on the Vital Masculinity Podcast. It was a real pleasure. And we both definitely look forward to hanging out with you again. It was a lot of fun. And everyone else, I hope you enjoy the show.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are listening once again to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. My name is Steven Sloyer, and I'm here, as always, with my dear friend, Brian Murphy. Brian, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing pretty well. Just still recovering from my hiking trip last weekend.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we are recording this 2 days after our last one, which was on letters, or to discuss the letter of King St. Louis the Ninth to his son, which is great advice, and I'm looking forward to finishing that series up. But tonight we have, we actually have a very special guest, and I think this podcast is going to be maybe 50%, 100, even maybe even 100% more manly than it is, because we have Mr. Manlyhood.com himself, Josh Hatcher, on the show. Josh, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. I don't know if it'll be necessarily 100% more manly or not, but I mean, there's three of us, so it might be like 33% more if you kind of do the math, right?
I'm an accountant, so I will get the calculation done later. We'll put that in the show notes for all of the math nerds out there. Maybe I'll put up a spreadsheet. We've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. I think so much has happened between, I know you went on vacation, and then I started, you know, closing on a house, and I mean, Brian, you've been hiking basically every weekend too, so it's life's been crazy. Besides, you know, all the craziness going on in the world, but I'm really excited to have this conversation. I think we were talking maybe for 15-20 minutes before we even started, and it's awesome to see how much we've been gelling. But for the folks that don't know who you are, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I am a marketing coordinator at my day job. I love to do graphic design and that kind of stuff, and I've enjoyed it. And so I guess graphic design, building websites, and writing are this skill set that I've had for a long time. And I've, you know, used it for church work. I've used it for business, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And 7 years ago, had this crazy idea. And I guess Manlyhood has kind of grown out of that. And over the years, I've had a lot of really neat opportunities to take what I do there and help men be better men. That's kind of the hope and the goal, which is a lot of what you guys are doing as well. It's to help men be better men. So it's kind of neat. When I started it, you know, the whole thing was kind of birthed because I had this hairy idea. I wanted to help guys. When I started it, the only skill set that I had was building websites and doing marketing and graphics. I didn't really, I had no idea what I was doing. And so it's kind of neat to see where it's grown from there.
Your website That's looks awesome. Great, by the way. It looks very slick.
Thank you. It still has a couple issues on mobile. I'm working on that a little bit. I'm always tweaking it. So I was thinking about it last night. I'm like, you know what? All these apps are coming out with dark mode, right? So that you can like look at it in the middle of the night without your eyes burning. And I'm like, I got to figure out how to put this in dark mode. So,
man, I envy you. I'm Brian. You're a software engineer, so you got a software engineer designer. I'm an accountant, and I'm the guy that does all the design for our website, just because it's something I like to do. But man, the amount of time I've tried to put into that for the results, it's not where I want to be yet. But it's a fun thing, and I like Brian said. I mean, I second that. I really really like your website. I think it's really really well done. And I mean, man, mobile, that's not fun. I always hate whenever I'm like, oh, there's another mobile user on a website. I wish I could present a better experience for him. But one of these days down the line, maybe we'll have an app, because apparently that's the new thing. Everyone's getting their own apps.
Yeah. I think the thing about, not that this is a graphic design podcast today, but the thing about mobile is, and really any time with web design, is every platform looks different. Every computer looks different. Yeah. I mean, you can do your best to make it work everywhere. There's always something that just doesn't quite jive. Somebody's grandma's trying to load it on Windows 98 SE, and it's like, oh, I can't play any videos. It's okay, Grandma. We got you.
Man, the 21st century, all these marvels.
So you guys asked me about myself. So I'm a dad. I've got four kids. Mm-hmm. My wife and I got married on the 4th of July, 98. And on the 4th of July, 99, we had twins.
Wow.
So then we had two more after that. Some people, we had a boy and a girl right out the gate. Everybody said, oh, you're done, right? No.
Okay. There you go.
So we had two more. And the middle kid turned 18 in October. We just moved him into his apartment last night. So a little bittersweet moment kind of there. And
congrats. That's still an achievement. They're out of the basement.
Last summer, the older two, the twins, both got married in the same summer. So
wow.
That's awesome.
Life is crazy, man. Life is crazy.
So I'm very busy.
Yeah, probably busier than I should be, but we make it work.
You know what's crazy as well is I would not have pegged you as just from looking at you on the video chat and listening to you as someone that was in the position to be married in the year 1998, because I was born in the year 1994. So I was four when you were married, and your children are 5 years younger than me. That's crazy.
Oh, so then you're actually, my son-in-law is 9 years older than my daughter. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So my youngest is 15. But yeah, no, I am 42.
Wow. 42. You have aged very well, sir. That's a weird compliment to give to a man, but I think that is apropos in this case.
So I've always told people.
Must be the beard.
For years, they say, you don't look old enough to have. I say, you know what? The fat pushes out the wrinkles. Then I lost 100 pounds and got really wrinkly. So.
Well, that's a good accomplishment. Better losing weight than not having wrinkles in my book.
Yeah, yeah. So the wrinkles are starting to show up now. It's all good though.
So how'd you come up with the idea? Why did you decide you wanted to start manlyhood.com?
Yeah. So I used to be a youth pastor, or rather a youth coordinator. You know how that works. You know, they're careful which titles they give out, but really that's what I was doing. I was serving these teenagers, and then they grew up, and then a bunch of them got busted for arson or sleeping with underage kids or lighting. Yeah. The arson was actually lighting a church on fire. And then, another kid was dealing coke. You know, and I'm like, I failed here. I must have missed something. And these guys, I was very connected with them. These young men who were they were men at this point. And one of them actually died of a heroin overdose. And that was kind of one of those moments where I'm like, all right, I'm not done here. You know, I've moved on since from that job, and I'm not even in a position to do that. But here are all these young men who several of them had told me, even though at the time I was like 8 years older than them, that I was the closest thing to a father they've ever had. And here they are. I'm letting them down, I guess. Mm. I think honestly, just that and just looking across the board at seeing all these young men like them who had no father figure and knowing how much my dad loved me and had poured into my life. I'm like, I kind of have to, you know, I felt like, I don't know, fat and happy and not and not reinvesting it. You know, I was keeping all that wisdom and all that love and all that guidance that my dad had given me to myself. And honestly, you know, I knew that it could make a difference to just pass it on. You know, anybody who follows me at Manlyhood will probably hear me say 1,000 times, my dad always said, you know, because honestly, that's what I'm doing, you know, and I'm just passing along what he taught me.
It's always amazing to me how, you know, we've gotten so much more connected as a world, kind of technically speaking, social media, you know, email, all these things which just kind of at face value have been so good. But I think we've had these generational gaps, and there's so many things. I'm not just blaming technology. Our culture and our society and a lot of the values that have become more prominent are certainly the part of it. But but it really is sad to, you know, to see so many men without father figures. And it's great to see like what you're doing. And I know there's been so many other people that like I've seen in my life, as well as just people you find on the internet that are doing very similar things. Basically, like Brett McKay is one of, you know, from Art of Manliness is another guy I think a lot of people consider like a internet father figure, so to speak. But it's really tragic. And as we were kind of talking about before the show, I think a lot of the crises that we've had in the year 2020 and all its craziness, as well as really just over the past couple of decades, is really due in part to a crisis of masculinity and at a deeper level, a crisis of fatherlessness.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, and let's look at that, you know, I know we don't want to get too political about it, but let's look at that neutrally and look at both sides of, you know what I mean? Like politically at both sides right now. And you see, people who are easily offended on both sides because nobody taught them how to have a spine and say, oh, you say something different than me. I'm, you know, it's like one side calls the other side snowflakes while they act like a snowflake. And then the other side, you know, is looting and pillaging and burning things in the streets. And don't get me wrong. I mean, right. There are real issues politically that are complex on both sides. And I don't want to downplay or take away from that. But, you know, like if I were out riding in the street, my dad would today, you know, if dad was alive still, he would have my hide. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't do that because I'm afraid that, you know, Jesus would let him come back to kick my butt. You know, I mean, you know, like that's just the way that we should kind of, I don't know. I think that lack of fatherhood and mentorship and is lacking. At the same time, there's a lack of teachability. And this goes again to both sides. If you can't, you could have the best dad in the world, but if you're just going to rebel and not listen anyway, what good does it do you? You know, I don't know. I think that's kind of where we're at, is we're just at a place where everybody has cast off restraint. Right. You know, they don't care anymore. They're just going to do what they want to do. And I think even at this point, it's going to be a few generations. It's going to take a few generations of good fathers to change the culture. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
I agree. I agree. And I think, Brian, you and I have certainly realized that in the beginning when we figured out this podcast. I don't think we ever really want this to become a kind of mass movement, because I think that actually kind of cheapens the message. I would rather have 10 guys that really understand the core of what it means to be a man, what it means to be, you know, a man of virtue, a man that has a strong moral character, and teaches other people in his family and his community to do that, versus 100 people that, you know, make us X amount of ad revenue or whatever, and they are just like, oh, okay, this is cool. You know, I'll just read this at lunch, and that's about it. And I think you're absolutely right, Josh, where it's going to take generations. It's going to take a lot of time. And that's, as a young man that has grown up in the age of basically, you know, two-day Amazon Prime delivery and all that other stuff, my patience is severely tested, I think, at times. It's not something I'm necessarily proud of, but I think it just shows that, you know, kind of in a similar vein to what you're talking about, so many people nowadays they're just impatient, you know, and that's just a general lack of character, which is, you know, in many ways precipitated by a general lack of fathers teaching both explicitly and implicitly, you know, good moral fiber, good moral character, as well as just basic life lessons. So I know I certainly have some work to do there, but it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens. But it's always good to, you know, connect with people and to help share people and promote people like yourself who are trying to reverse that trend and trying to basically help instill, I'll say in many ways, an internal law and order for each man.
I like that. The internal law.
What would you say are kind of some of your primary, do you have like a specific focus of what you're trying to accomplish with the men that you're trying to reach?
Yeah. I would say, one of the kind of the original missions, I've worded a little different 'cause it's catchy for me, but I don't think other people were relating to what I was saying, or maybe it sounded cheap, but it helps my mind process it, and that is to equip, educate, and entertain men in an engaging way, you know? And I think that is, you know, the three or four E's, I don't remember how many E's there are, but that concept helps me to think about, okay, is this going to make a guy laugh? That's good, right? It's good to make a guy laugh and have some fun. Oh my goodness, think about that for a second. Like, everybody takes everything so seriously these days. Like, I've talked a lot about my dad, but my dad was actually a professional birthday clown.
Really?
And, wow, that's
yeah, amazing. Yeah. We could totally have an entire podcast episode dedicated to that if you ever want to do that.
Was he Bozo?
No. His name was Yogi the Clown, and he was amazing. He was amazing. Actually, his Facebook page is still out there. So if you ever look up Yogi the Clown, and he would post when he was alive, he posted a joke every day.
Okay.
And so there's just 1,000 horrible dad jokes. So if you're ever any men out there that are looking for some dad jokes, hop on there. I've thought about taking the page over and maybe just kind of like scheduling some. And I'm like, it just doesn't feel right after losing him. But, you know, it might be like, oh, Yogi the Clown's a ghost now. I don't know. But back to the manlyhood thing is, like, I wanted this to be fun. Like, I don't care how old you are, a potato gun is fun. Tannerite is fun. You know, I mean, like, dad jokes are fun. You can't see it, but on my wall over here is a Big Mouth Billy Bass. It's fun. You know, I mean, this is, it matters, you know, and yeah, what I do, we talk about some serious stuff. In fact, I'm in the middle of a podcast series right now. Actually, I think Monday was the last of 5 parts, things that men don't want to talk about. And we've talked about, you know, domestic abuse and the past and trauma and sex abuse and porn and masturbation and things that are, I mean, we get into deep stuff because you have to, mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know what? We got to laugh sometimes. We have to have fun sometimes. So, you know, you might see that 1 minute, and then you might see a funny meme the next. That's just kind of, I don't want to ever take away from, you know, we're whole people and we have all kinds of emotions. And if you just get too serious about everything all the time, you're just going to be a sourpuss. You know, nobody wants to be around that.
Yeah. We could definitely use some more fun with coronavirus going on too. Getting locked down at home.
Oh, I tell you what, you know, where I live in the middle of nowhere. You know, we're actually in the middle of the Allegheny National Forest. So, nice. The town I live in is Bradford, PA, where they make Zippo lighters and case knives, but it's just a little blue collar town in the middle of nowhere. You know what? There's about 30,000 people in a 30-mile radius. And, outside of that, you know, there's not many. You know, when you look at Pennsylvania on the map, you'll see, let me see, I'm going to try to make, I don't know if that's reversed or not, but you got this little section right here that's all green. Yeah, we're in that. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, in Pennsylvania, the governor issued all these orders, all these really strict orders. And we're like, there's like 5 people here, man. Like, you know, like, it, and yeah, the coronavirus, man, everybody was just like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. So here I could totally picture, you know, like a militia setting up in a perimeter and just saying, all you city folks stay out. We're not going to, you know, you guys stay there with your virus. We got this.
Brian and I can relate. Brian's in upstate New York and I'm in North Carolina, which is, you know, second tier maybe to PA and New York, but still a lot of restrictions. And it's been very interesting. I've still not even been able to go back to church. I think you're at a better place than I am. We just had basically a lot of people up, like have a small uprising about our phase 2.5, and bar owners are upset because you still can't open bars, but if you serve food, miraculously, it goes away. You know, the coronavirus goes away. So I don't know. There's been a lot of hubbub down here. So
yeah, I don't know if I can relate completely because I live in the middle of the city. So I've been thinking though that I want to get out of here because I don't like being locked down with a bunch of crazy people that are trying to burn your house down.
Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, your governor, because I'm right on the line of New York State, and we have as much fun making fun of your governor as ours. So
yeah, we call him King Andy.
I don't remember if it was your governor or ours that said that chicken wings can't constitute a meal, and I'm like, dude, I'm keto, man. Like, that's totally a meal.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you don't think chicken wings is a meal, we're going to go. We're going to throw down, man. Yeah. If there's nothing, if there's ever a time for revolution, it's over that. I'm telling you.
He just upset everyone in Buffalo, New York.
You wait till the Bradford wing massacre happens. I'm just saying.
Honestly, that sounds like the perfect September plot timeline for 2020. With just everything that's been going on. I mean, we had murder hornets. We had, what was the alligator? The cocaine alligators or cocaine crocs. And, you know, now we got the Bradford wing, the Bradford Buffalo wing massacre.
Yeah, goodness. We also had this week there was a pilot reported a guy flying a jetpack at 30,000 feet above LAX. And I'm like, what's going on? What year is this again?
I think, you know, I love your approach with the humor. I think it's funny. It reminds me a lot of my qualms with a lot of the, like, the self-improvement. I don't even want to call it a movement. It's almost like a self-improvement machine. I don't have an Instagram, but I'm sure if you go on Instagram and use hashtag rise and grind or, you know, self-improvement or motivational, whatever, you know, it's all these like really empty platitudes. And it's like, it's great. Like every now and then I'll be honest, like I'll go on YouTube and be like motivation, you know, motivational videos, whatever it is. And there's a lot of great content on there. I mean, I think I've tweeted out on our page Twitter a couple of times, like some good videos that I enjoy. And it's typically just people reciting poetry like If by Rudyard Kipling, but man, it's really depressing, because I've tried it for almost a decade now in my life, just trying to, with sheer force of will and with sheer just like seriousness and no frivolity at all, to be like, I'm going to get better and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then the second you fall off the train, it's like, you know, the floodgates have just broken open and, you know, you fall harder than you were before, whether it's something like trying to quit pornography or whether it's something like, you know, trying to work on a project like this. I mean, I think you're absolutely hit the nail on the head when you're talking about, you know, you kind of need to cater to the whole human person. And humor is a very important aspect of not just being a human, but even masculinity in general. I think there's a very long tradition of that. So I love hearing, you know, people kind of address that as compared to just being like, no, you need to make sure you're reading 20 pages a night. And, you know, check it off and you're good.
Yeah. No, it's funny because Ryan Mickler, this is not calling him out, but Ryan Mickler, Order of Man, you know, we've had communications, right, you know, since he started his thing. We've been in touch. And I remember him posting one day about how, you know, we need to be serious. And he's talking about how you don't need clowns in your life. And I'm like, dude, shut up. You don't even know, you know, like you don't even know about clowns. Like, stop using clowns. That's it. Clown lives matter. I'm just saying. Like, no, but in all seriousness though, like that whole concept of just, you know, have some fun and laugh. Like, think about it. When you get together with your band of brothers, you laugh. You know, when you, I mean, heck, watch, you know, I bet you Jocko Willink, the hardest guy that any of us can probably think about in our mind, right? You know, I guarantee you that they were cracking jokes when they got back from the battlefield. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what they do. That's what we do. You know, it honestly is, I mean, it's not the most important thing about masculinity, but it sure as heck makes the process of becoming a better person a lot easier. A lot more fun. I mean, not everything has to be fun, but, you know, like, and it helps if you have a sick sense of humor. You know, you know, you see somebody fall down and like break their face and you're like, you know, you're laughing and, you know, hey, and then when you fall down and break your face, you can laugh too, you know?
Right, right. I think it's, I mean, we definitely have been for the past, well, half a decade, really since 2015 and that election, I would say, we've been in kind of like, not even just the information age, but like the meme age. And you mentioned memes, you know, and sharing some of them. And I think it really hits at the power of a lot of these, whether they're simple or whether they're a little bit more complex and require some background knowledge. I mean, memes have really taken over the internet on, you know, everything from political to cultural issues to, you know, just people sharing things on, you know, in a Facebook group about nothing or a Facebook group with your neighbors. And I think it's really interesting to see how that has shaped discourse as well as provided an outlet for a lot of people that are just kind of tired. I mean, nowadays, oh gosh, nowadays, I mean, Brian, you and I don't like to date our episodes, but, you know, this is beginning of September, and I think really since we've mentioned probably coronavirus in almost every one of our episodes, just being like, yep, another day of coronavirus lockdowns, it's crazy to see how politicized everything is, and it's sad, it's depressing. I mean, I felt like just depressed, and I've struggled with depression before, but like, you know, this week it just came back, because it's just like, oh, all the news is bad again. You know, what's new? What's new in life? I need something light. So this conversation's is a good white pill for me.
The depression, I'm feeling it too, man. This has been, it has been hard. Like,
yeah,
just the constant change, the constant not knowing what's happening, the constant stream of this guy's evil, this guy's evil, and you don't know who to believe because everybody's right. Apparently lying to you. And it's like, you know, that's actually my previous life. I was a journalist, and mm-hmm. so like I'm watching literally. Yeah, tell me. I'm telling you, man. Like, you know, you're listening to the news, and you're like, okay, I went to school for this. I was 14 years old reading the news on the local radio station, so I know. You know what I mean? Like, I've been doing this like for years. You totally just twisted that to make your point, and I don't care which station you're listening to, they both do it, you know? And it's just like, I'm done. I excuse me. Don't edit that out, dude. That was like,
that is rural Pennsylvania for you.
No, that's me.
I think that's New York.
Yeah, there's I'm in the city, and someone just sped by on their motorcycle.
That is showing rural their manliness, Rochester, I guess. For you, if that is a thing.
It's awesome.
That'll be our new transition segment. My goodness. My wife would kill me if that.
Speaking of coronavirus, I was telling Steven, I don't know, last week or so, just thinking about like all the social distancing. I feel like that, you know, as men, we kind of have a social distancing problem before this coronavirus even came up, where, you know, people go home, they hide in their house, they watch TV, Netflix, whatever it is. I think part of the problem with masculinity, with men, with families in general, is people are distant socially.
I will echo that sentiment 150,000%. That statistic just completely threw your accountant for a loop when I said 150,000%.
I'm not going to say anything.
I'm telling you, I am a hugger, and I, you know, dude, I'm telling you what, I would have no qualms at all about walking up to my buddy, grabbing a hold of him and kissing him on the cheek. It does not feel, my masculinity is not threatened by affection. And in fact, sometimes I think it's fun to threaten somebody else's with it. So, you know, my buddy, I'm always smacking him in the butt when he walks by, and it does not, like, it is not sexual. It does not turn me on.
Right.
And I know it doesn't turn him on, but it sure is fun to make him mad. But you know, I mean, like, we get so, you know, and on top of that, we're Americans. So we've been raised in this lone wolf McQuaid culture where, you know, John Wayne doesn't need anybody, you know, and you know, we don't need anybody to come alongside us and live life with us and do things with us. And like, not even our own families. We literally are all in separate rooms watching separate television shows. Just, we're socially distanced from our own family, you know?
Right.
And I fight it as much as anybody else, you know?
There's definitely that inbuilt, you know, pressure to do that. You know, it's the path of least resistance, going home, watching Netflix, you know, and browsing your phone at the same time while your wife or your kids are in another room doing the same thing.
I think, with your wife, there's a verb, it's an internet verb. They call it fubbing, phubbing.
Oh, yep.
Which I don't get it. It's probably inappropriate. I don't know if you have to censor that out or not.
No.
But just the idea that you're sitting there mindlessly scrolling while you're laying next to the person that you're supposed to be madly, passionately in love with, you know?
Right.
And, man, dude, that it kicks my butt sometimes. Cause I'm, like I said, part of me is a journalist. I love the internet. This is interesting stuff for me. I mean, I could get sucked into reading some stupid article about whatever, you know, for hours. Oh, and then you go down the rabbit trail or you get on the conspiracy theory kick. Oh, I'm telling you what, man, I'm gone. You start getting me like, because I'm like, oh, wait, you're saying that there's a secret satanic cult of pedophiles? Okay. It might not make sense, but there might be something to this. And then I'll, like, I'm telling you, dude, I read like like, this was 2 weeks ago. I got triggered by this whole thing. You know, I'm like, why do they say that? So, like, it doesn't make sense. I don't believe what they're saying, but there's got to be some truth to it, right? So then I get on the FBI websites, and I'm looking in their vault, and I'm reading, like, case files from the 80s, and I'm like, oh, my gosh! There is a secret satanic pedophile cult! And, like, I'm ruined, man. I'm like, I can't do that. And it, then I'm like, then I'm in a funk. I'm like, dude, the whole world is controlled by evil satanic pedophiles. And then I'm like, no good to anybody, you know?
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about communism lately, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. No, you don't. Not until you get into the secret satanic pedophile. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, for me, the issue, I remember one of my favorite, and probably one of the most eye-opening, I think, books I ever read was Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Nassim Taleb. And he had this one, like, quote in there, because he writes, I don't, have you read that book, Josh?
No.
Okay, it's a wonderful book. So Nicholas Nassim Taleb is a former, like, stock trader, you know, basically worked his way up and then quit, and he writes... I liked it. Right, yeah. He writes basically about philosophy, but he incorporates a lot that he learned about stock trading. And one of the things that he said, which I think is just so profound, is that if you take the beginning of a day of stocks and assume that every minute the stock market goes up 1%, then every other minute it goes down 1%, and then at the end of the day it ends even. So if you're checking your, you know, if you check the stocks at the end of the day, you're like, okay, nothing happened. That's fine. You know, you don't feel good. You don't feel bad. You're just neutral. If you check every, you know, other minute when it goes up, you're going to feel happy. If you check every other minute that it goes down, you're going to feel sad. And then if you total it, it's not going to equal zero, because the sadness of, you know, the stock market going down, you losing money, hurts a lot more than the happiness of it going up. And I think that relates to so much stuff. I mean, like, you could look at, like, polls and do that. Like, oh, you know, there's 9 great polls and then there's 1 bad one. Or, you know, there's 9 great news stories and then there's 1 bad one. And I think we're just so caught up as men. Really just as people in general, let's be honest, but in men in particular, I think, you know, and this relates to fubbing, this relates to the politicization of everything, where we're just like, we need that dopamine kick. We need that, whatever it may be. You know, and like, you know, Brian, you and I just did a couple episodes on pornography. And we, you know, we talked about our own struggles with it in the past. And I think so many people just like, I mean, the news is basically pornographized. I mean, like you said, both sides are twisting the truth. Some side, you know, some people, some sites, whatever, you know, whatever site it is, are just overtly lying. You know, now they have the rise of this so-called, like, fact checker thing. And even those are just so far off in so many cases. Like, I saw a fact check about how 2 + 2 = 5. And don't get me started on that, both as an accountant, as a human being, and as a reader of George Orwell. Because, man, I just don't know what's happening. But I think you just have so many men nowadays that don't know when to stop, that are always saying, okay, well, maybe if I check next time, maybe the stock market will be up, or maybe there'll be another good news story. Maybe, you know, I'll get that extra like on my Facebook post or my tweet. And it's a very damaging, it's almost a cultish mindset, because it's just incredibly hard to break out of, even though it's not something we were necessarily taught.
So when we look at social media, this was about the time before, I think it's even before the last election. There was an article that had gotten buried somewhere, and somebody started sharing it, and it was about how Facebook basically did a study. And what they did is they took 25, well, I don't know how many, I'm going to throw some numbers out there. I'll say numbers don't matter, but I know how that's going to make you feel, but the numbers don't matter. But they took 25 people and 25 people, and they fed 25 of them negative news stories. And they fed the other 25 of them positive news stories. And then they watched the things that those people posted. And you could see, and then somehow they were able to, you know, I think, and they did it unwittingly, which is interesting, you know, but just to kind of see, okay, how are they feeling? What are they doing? And kind of measuring based on how they're engaging. And the people that saw the negative news actually engaged with Facebook more and shared more negative news, and it, like, snowballed out. And it was like, so then that was before they actually developed the algorithm that they developed. And the algorithm is supposed to be designed to show you what you want to see. So I actually took, gosh, a month ago, and I went through, and I just, everybody that posted something political, I unfollowed them. And I didn't even realize I was following CNN news. I'm like, why am I following CNN? You know, I'm like, unclick. You know, and I just I unfollowed all these things. And at least for a couple weeks, I didn't see it. I didn't see all the junk. Even my friends that were that are close but that are very political, you know, you can snooze them for a little while.
Right, right.
And so you snooze them for 30 days or whatever. And then all of a sudden I start seeing what I want to see in my news feed. I start seeing the motivational quotes. I start seeing the scripture verses shared. I start seeing more baby pictures from my cousin, you know, sharing her little daughter. And I'm like, hey, I feel better. You know, and I think that really what has to happen here is we are going to have to take control of it. It's we want to blame the media. We want to blame Facebook. We want to blame Twitter. We want to blame whatever for the mind control, which I do think they're intending to do, mm-hmm. right? Like, I honestly think that's the case. I think they want us to buy in, because if we're angry, if we're sad, if we're depressed, if we are divided, you know, if we're afraid, then we tune in more.
It's profitable.
Like, it's actually more addictive than the positive dopamine feeling. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's probably the same chemical, but it's more addictive, and we want it more. So we have to choose to tune it out. We have to choose to turn it off, because they're not going to choose to turn it off. They're not going to choose to make it better, because the same corporations that own all the media own the pharmaceutical and the car mm-hmm. and the, you know what I mean? Like they own all the stuff that they're trying to sell you when you tune into it. Shut it off. Tune it out. Mm-hmm. Don't pay attention to it and start putting good stuff in. And honestly, if you can't do it, just delete your Facebook for a few days, dude, like for a week, get a detox. You know, if you don't want to delete your account, like I manage several pages for different, you know, companies and work and everything else. So like I even went so far just to delete the app for a few days just to kind of reset my brain, you know, and then for me to get on it, I had to get on my computer, which meant I wasn't on it as much. And, you know, I don't know. I think that that's the problem there. And honestly, every problem really comes back to us taking personal responsibility and saying, no more, I'm done. Stop poisoning me. And if you don't want to get poisoned, don't eat the food, you know?
Yeah, I think that the discipline, personal responsibility that is kind of key here. Because you look at things like that where they're trying to manipulate you with social media, and I think they're taking our actual desires, maybe things that are good desires to some extent, and they're using them. And if you don't have the discipline to, you know, to respond to it properly, you're kind of just going to follow whatever feelings you have. I was listening to one of your episodes that I really enjoyed, actually. Well, I enjoyed all the ones that I saw from you. It was called Four Things All Men Crave. And I was thinking about when we were talking about this, about, you know, maybe part of this, like searching through the news feed, trying to find that, you know, you're searching for adventure. You're searching for a virtual adventure when you're, you know, sitting in your house or walking down the streets in the bus stop or whatever you're doing. Or maybe when you're trying to fight that pedophile
right.
cult, you want your desire, your craving battle. And, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to satisfy these cravings, these desires when you're just hanging out in your house?
I think that is definitely it. That's what it comes down to. And I think hanging out in our house is part of the problem.
All right.
I think that, you know, I mean, from the battle, from a spiritual perspective, you know, I mean, I think about, you know, my dad for one, and other people that I know, I mean, we would call them a prayer warrior. You know what I mean? Where they literally would just say, I'm going to dig in to this. And this is how I, not to quote, the great theologian Michael W. Smith, but this is how I fight my battles, right? You know, I mean, I think those are the only words in that song, I think, but yeah, no, but, you know, taking that perspective on it and making sure that we redirect our anger to the right kind of enemy, you know, and not the people around us necessarily. Now, we want justice. That's in us. That's good. That's like, you know, a man should want justice. And I'll tell you what, there might come a time when we have to fight a literal battle. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, there are men that have to go fight battles to protect our country or whatever, you know, and we may all have to be called upon for that someday. Who knows? But I think that we do. We crave those four things we talked about. Beauty is one of them, you know, and we could probably talk about that in a second because, you know, I know I would like to. We've kind of talked about, hinted about porn a little bit, and I kind of wanted to talk about that with you guys. Oh, so we can come back to that one in a minute. But, you know, adventure, beauty, battle, and I, you guys, my brain is fried.
Honor.
What's that?
Honor.
Honor. Honor. Yes. So we crave those things and they're in us, man. Like, we want them. And we also, as much as we crave them, are willing to substitute it. You know what I mean? Like I really am craving, my body is telling me that I want something good for me to eat, but that Reese's cup looks really good. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's not good for me to eat that sugary thing, but it's convenient, it's accessible, and it tastes good. So it covers up the craving temporarily, but the craving is still there. And, you know, I think, yeah, you're right. We will settle for a counterfeit like nothing, you know, especially when it's right in front of us and being offered to us. So,
yeah, you kind of look at like video games, for example. They tend to have all of those things in it. You know, you're right, fighting the battle, you're doing an adventure, you're receiving honor from winning, and then maybe you rescue the princess at the end. That kind of ties into all of those.
Well, my son has been playing Breath of the Wild, right? And which I think is a Zelda, it's a new Legend of Zelda game. Okay. And or Red Dead Redemption is another one he was playing, and I was walking by and I'm like I actually stopped and was just like in awe of how beautiful it was. Like this, yeah. You know, the art in this is beautiful. And I'm watching this Red Dead Redemption game, which is not even a fantasy realm. It's just the Old West. And I'm like, I can see why somebody could get sucked into this because it looks so beautiful and it looks so real, you know? And I'm like, at the same time, I'm not condemning video games, but I can see why, you know, when you go too far, you can get sucked into that. And I'm like, you know, this is kind of neat, Abe. Do you want to go on a real adventure? Let's go for a hike, you know? And we did. You know, we went out. Actually, you know, he's, you know, we went and had some fun. But, yeah, that is, I think, the appeal to video games. And sometimes the appeal to the internet as well. You know, I'm not going to condemn these things that could be, they're tools that could be used for good, right? You know, a video game could be something to help you develop hand-eye coordination and problem-solving skills and blow off a little bit of steam. Right, in moderation, it makes sense. You could use that. I stopped being able to compute video games after the Super Nintendo. There's too many buttons. My brain cannot process that. For a little while, I had like my friend was playing like one of those games on the Android or whatever, and you could like play with each other and compete a little bit. And so I thought, I'll do that so I can relate to him. No, man, that was a mess. I think it was Clash of Clans or something. We're like sending, no, dude, don't. I was a mess. I wasted way too much time trying to, you know, build up my whole little empire. You know, I remember sitting next to my wife and she was playing Farmville. She stopped playing that now. She does that time. But because we literally like, I'm like, let's quit playing Farmville and like actually start a real farm. And so we got chickens and planted a big garden and, you know, and raised meat rabbits.
There you go.
You know, awesome. Now we don't have time for the real stuff now either now, but that's another story. But it was a really cool adventure to actually, you know, instead of playing a game in a virtual world where we build a little empire, a farm or whatever, we actually, you know what, there was nothing as cool as having a meal where everything on the table we grew in the backyard, you know, that's awesome. Was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's one of my life goals.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Get in the city, man. You can do it.
Well, I'm moving out. As soon as if I get married, I'm out of here.
Hey, man, Zebulon, North Carolina. We got chickens next door.
Come on down to Pennsylvania, buddy. The taxes are lower, and then, you know.
I can bring my guns.
3% taxes in North Carolina. 3%.
Oh. Yeah, but don't you guys have hurricanes?
No, not really. I've been down here for 15 years. I'm from Jersey and Delaware, that area. So, and actually, my family is from my like ancestral homeland, so to speak, outside of Germany, is like Bucks County, Pennsylvania. So so really, really close to there. Love the area, and I love the Allegheny area. But the Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's ever really been many major hurricanes. Maybe there's been two, and there's been no issues. So,
don't fingers they call crossed. Them the Carolina Hurricanes, said, though.
I don't know why. It's probably because what else do you have in Carolina? I mean, we have the Tar Heels, which is, you know, I'm sure they're going to change that name at some point. Oh God, the Blue Devils, the Demon Deacons.
That's racist.
Oh yeah,
Blue Devils is racist.
To be fair, there were blue people in Kentucky. We all know about, or West Virginia. We all know about that. Don't you guys heard about that story?
Is that from the silver poisoning?
I feel like it may have been that, or it may have just been like so much inbreeding. There was something, yeah, but it was like Kentucky or West Virginia, like a town that had no, like basically no contact with the outside world, and there's still some remnotes. Like you guys, you know, I'll put in the show notes.
No, dude, that's a plot to the Smurfs. That's the Smurfs.
Oh, right, yeah, Smurfs, West Virginia. I there's a Smurf edition of John Denver's song, so you know I must be. if when I find that video, I'm pretty sure the guy was on Oprah. I don't know why I know that, but there was like a, you know, a guy who's like blue. Anyway, let's talk about porn. Let's get away from West Virginia. Really hard pivot into pornography.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, speaking of counterfeits, like, right. I think that the reason a lot of men turn to pornography, I mean, it's a lot easier to just go online and, you know, look up whatever videos you want than it is to, you know, go out, talk to a girl that you don't know, take her on a date, you know, maybe get married. that takes a lot more time than to just have a fantasy experience on the internet.
Well, and, you know, the statistics right now are proving that people are actually even dating less than they were, because we have a whole generation of boys who have not learned anything at all about respecting women, and the only thing they know about sex is what they've learned from porn that they've been exposed to from the time they were little kids, because nobody was monitoring their internet access. And it is really a sad situation because they don't know how to treat a woman. Then we also have, let's face it, there is a cultural disdain for men right now. And so I think there are a lot of men who are almost afraid to talk to women because they don't want to. You know, it's like, he tried to rape me just because he said hello, you know, or asked me on a date. And I mean, these stories, like, that's that mindset. It's almost like, I don't need you. I can do this myself. You know, like, that's what the women say. And then that's what the men say too. And now this is what we have, is this culture that, like, I am afraid for the survival of our nation in a few generations, because we're not going to be making babies. Like, our birth rate is starting to fall, actually.
Look at Japan. Yeah, look at Japan. I mean, that's a crisis happening right there right now.
You know, and yeah, and that counterfeit of it is everything, man. Like, why do the work? Heck, I mean, I'm married. We've been married for 22 years. I love my wife. But sex sometimes can be hard. Sometimes it can be work. You have to put into this. You know what I mean? You don't just, right. You know, it's not... The thing about good married sex is it's not about me. It's about her. And for her, it's not about her. It's about me. And, you know, 22 years, man, it only gets better. Like, I can tell you that there are many times when we're both thinking, this is the best time ever. Like, it just gets better. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's no outside influences. There's no other partners. We don't need... It just gets better because you learn each other. And I know what pleases her, and she knows what pleases me, right? Like, that's a beautiful relationship that you can build. But early on in our relationship, honestly, is even in the first year, like, I went from not, you know, I went from being a teenager who had learned how to take care of things, right? And never learned how to stop taking care of things himself, to now shifting and trying to figure this out. And so... And then all of a sudden I discovered, you know, this was 1998. So I discovered, you know, online porn, and, you know, that was a deep dive, you know, and it was not easy, and I almost lost my marriage. Actually lost a job over it. And then, you know, hey, then I'm clean. I'm good. It went away. And then it crept back in again, and I almost lost my marriage again. And, you know, that time was not a pretty situation, you know, and actually I tell the story I know we have a variety of people that listen, people that believe in God, people that might not believe in God, but and may believe different things about God. All I know is I was laying on the bed and I was sick. Like you ever get like a flu bug or something, and from the top of your head down to the soles of your feet just ache, just hurt. I was in pain all over my entire body. And my wife had left the room. I had to call off work, and I'm sitting there, and I heard a voice out loud say, "If you don't repent and confess this, I'm going to kill you." I swear I thought my wife heard it, because I heard it out loud. You know, now we could get into the theology of it. I honestly don't care. That's what I heard. And so, you know, I told her, I called her in and I told her that I had been, you know, addicted to porn. I'd been using it when I shouldn't be. And she, it was almost like all that pain instantly left my body. And I watched, as you can almost see it go into hers. Do you know what I mean? She felt betrayed. She felt hurt. And, you know, as a Christian, it's not acceptable, and it shouldn't have been there. And, and it was a mess, and it took a while, honestly, for her to trust me again. Fast forward a few years, and, I was doing really good, and I just kind of randomly got tempted, you know, and like printed out some pictures, you know, I'm like, I'm going to take care of business. And then like the printer started printing out 100 pictures.
Yeah.
Just, I don't even know. So I'm like, no. And I shredded them. Didn't even move any further forward with it. And I was actually, then the next day, one of the pages had gotten jammed and I got caught. Somebody found one of the half printed. I'm like, yeah. So, you know, like I kind of had to come to this realization that for me, I'm not going to get away with it. I'm just going to get caught. Yeah. So I had to get down to the root of it. And what I realized is, like, it wasn't just about that for me.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that I kept wanting to go back to it, like, it was, like, it came from somewhere. And I had to dig in deep and talk about some stuff. And, you know, I had to make some big changes in terms of accountability and how I did things that way. You know, like, I wasn't going to work late at night after everybody went to sleep. You know, I was going to... my computer, you know, if I've got a computer, like, you can see it, you know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not going to go, you know, I just making big changes with the way that I did things so that if I would get caught, you know, if I did it, and that helped me to break out of it, but it didn't change what was in my mind. It didn't change what was in my heart. And that was a lot harder, because I had to go back and I had to, like, honestly, this is something that I think helps any man. No matter what you're facing, if you find yourself having a struggle or a temptation or something that is just broken in you and not functioning right, ask yourself the simple question, when's the first time I remember feeling this? Yeah. When's the first time I experienced this feeling or this thought? And whatever first comes to your mind, put a pin in that and then say no earlier. You know what I mean? like who we are gets shaped early on. And you know, and when I look back, you know, like, I was about 3 years old when another little kid who'd been sexually abused taught me stuff I shouldn't know. You know, I didn't get abused by an older kid or an adult. Like, it was another kid my own age, you know? And so I learned how to have sexual feelings at 3 years old. And had basically been just practicing that my entire life. And I had to really process that and break that down. You know, that's the first question you ask. And then you've got other questions, you know, where was God in that? You know, what was wrong about that situation, and what should have happened? You know what I mean? And just honestly, like, being real about that, and then giving that, you know, for me, I gave that to God, and I had to change the way I think. And like, guys, like, that was the hardest. Like, I actually like I think they say that the human male brain thinks about sex once every 6 seconds, I think, is the statistic. Yeah. So like I'm like, okay, I need to make sure that when I am thinking about it, I'm thinking about it with my wife. You know what I mean? Right. And so like I put a rubber band on my wrist And like every time that a thought would come in my head that was not right, I would snap myself, you know, with a rubber band. Like not as penance, but just as that wake up, right. Wake up. Don't go down that road. And like I'd come home from work and my whole wrist was all red, you know, just from that constant snapping. I know I've been talking a long time, guys. I'm sorry.
You're good.
Like,
good
that was my journey and what it took. And like, you know, now like I remember meeting with my pastor and we were talking about it kind of after my, you know, my last little hiccup there where I got caught before I really got too deep in it. And, you know, at that time, honestly, like the temptation to go down that road literally felt like walking a gauntlet of archers shooting arrows at me constantly, you know, mm-hmm. It was everywhere. Like there were TV shows, like I would try to watch a TV show, you know, and I'm like, hey, this looks like a good wholesome show. And then you watch it and there's a girl in a bikini, which then that would trigger me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that would be like, yep. Ah,
yeah,
you know, or even sometimes just a nice looking lady. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe she wasn't in a bikini, but she was nice looking. And that would just trigger me. And I would want to think more about that. And I want to. And so for me, I had to really retrain that. And I remember him telling me, this temptation will never necessarily go away. But as you practice discipline of not letting your mind go that way, as you practice it, you get stronger so that it's like it goes from arrows to like Nerf darts. You know what I mean? You know, like don't get me wrong. Like I can still be tempted. And sometimes my mind goes places it still shouldn't. Right. Sometimes I'll see a girl and I have to like dial that back like real because it's like I want, you know what I mean? Like I am a man and I'm a human and those things could still always be there, you know. But for me to retrain myself to think about it and to, you know, tell myself the truth over and over again, that's something that I think a lot of men feel weird about talking to themselves, you know, like tell yourself the truth. The truth is I have a beautiful wife at home who loves me. Where we've had 22 years of practice getting good at this. Do I really want to throw that away and start all over again with somebody else? It's not going to be better than what I've got, you know? Like mm-hmm. I am, you know, like I have to tell myself that truth. Or, you know what? Think about everything you would throw away. Think about how this would hurt your kids. And so talking to myself and reminding myself when those temptations come now, like, you know, some of those same television shows that I used to not be able to watch, I could watch now and it doesn't bother me the same way. Although now, like, dude, you guys, you said that you are, you guys are how old again?
I'm 32. I'm
25.
25 and 32?
30, or 33. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot how old I was.
Hey, that's right, your birthday. I lost a year about that same time frame, too. I got ahead of myself. Yeah, so I get you. Okay, so I, like, when I, now at 42, when I, you know, see, like, you know, like a Victoria's Secret ad come on television, all I see is my daughters. Like, I'm like, oh, they look like little girls. And like, it actually just makes me sick to my stomach. Do you know what I mean? Like, where are their fathers? You know, like that wasn't even intentional. That just like shifted, which is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's helpful for me to have that shift kind of in my brain. But
what would you say to guys that are, so I'm single, like I can't really tell myself like, you know, think about my wife because I don't have a wife. I don't feel like I have a whole lot to lose. So,
mm-hmm. Well, here's another interesting conversation to have is that, especially when it comes to stuff like that, right? Looking at when you hear the stories of what some of these women have gone through that are making that video that you're watching or that made those pictures that you're watching, actually, I told somebody about this once here. It wasn't that long ago. It was about a year ago. I started learning some things about human trafficking. I started learning some things about what's going on behind the scenes that we don't see when you're watching that video or looking at those pictures.
Right.
And so I was telling a guy about it and he was I have a relationship with God that tells me not to do this. So I have like a conscience and I have, you know, other things happening and he has like no moral compass or any reason to do things that way. You know what I mean? Like he has no higher power asking him in his mind to do anything different. Right. And when I told him some of these stories, he told me, he says, dude, I tried to watch porn and I like you know, couldn't even get into it after I knew that. And so like these women are oftentimes like brought into this industry when they're still kids, when they're 14, 13 years old. Pornhub is the most popular porn website, I guess. Don't Google it. Don't look at it. I don't know. I've never been there. Okay. But I will occasionally catch an article being shared every, you know, every year there's an article that gets put out about what the top searches are on this website. And this stuff should disgust us. Yep. That these are the most valuable things that people are looking for. They're looking for, it's rape fantasy. It's incest. It's the number one search category every year has been teen porn or, you know, daddy daughter or like, I'm like, this is disgusting. This is disgusting that that is what's turning people on right now. And to me, that's disgusting. But to somebody who's in the thick of it, it's where their mind is going. So now legally, it's illegal to produce child porn. It's illegal to distribute it. And so if a website is putting it out there, they should be held accountable for that, right? So these things are usually mock or fake. They're right. Made to look like that. But there was a case where there was a 14-year-old girl who was abducted, drugged, and raped, and her video was on Pornhub for 5 years. And she kept begging them to take it down, and they wouldn't. And like, you know, I was reading her story, and she was saying that, you know, and she said, what part of me saying no and crying and trying to push him away in the video was sexy to you? You know, now that's, you know, I myself can't even imagine wanting to look at that kind of porn. Do you know what I mean? But there are some people that are turned on by that. But even the thought of like, just because she looks like she's enjoying it doesn't mean she is. She may have gotten into this industry when she was a teenager before she was even, you know, and now here she is, she's 21 years old and has been doing it for a long time. And the money is good and the drugs are good. And she has no way out. And I've read a lot of those stories too, where these women feel like they have no way out. And then you look at, I saw another article that kind of blew my mind, and it said, your favorite porn star is probably dead. And they were looking at the statistics of how many of these girls die of drug overdoses, die of suicide, and then their porn just keeps going on. So I would tell you, that is somebody's daughter. That is somebody's mom. That is somebody's sister. And the next time that you're tempted, I want you to think about that before you partake. Yeah, I know. It doesn't solve the immediate problem, which is, how do I take care of this urge? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so for you, you've got to find your why. You've got to find your why. Honestly, that's what my best friend actually lost 600 pounds. He's a guy you guys need to have on your podcast sometime. Wow. I'll send you some info later. But he lost 600 pounds, and he helped me when I started losing my weight, and he said the first step is finding your why. Why are you doing this? And that is what should drive you. And so if you're looking at you know, this temptation or trying to overcome or change this part of your life, or why do I want to not go down this route? You need to know why, and you need to make that the driving force. I would say, your why is going to look a little different. Some people might say, my why is that I want to, when I meet my wife, I want to be able to give her everything. Do you know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you, after I got married, you would think that having a wife would make it all of that stuff go away because I didn't need it anymore. It didn't. It actually got worse.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah. It got worse because I didn't have any reason. I didn't know. And so if you train yourself, here's the other thing, just from a biological standpoint, porn and masturbation teaches you the fastest path to get the job done, right? That's not what she needs. She needs longer. She needs a little extra time. And it's not always fast. And you do not want to condition yourself the opposite way if you want to have a healthy sex life someday. Right. You know, I mean, if you're somebody who's saying I'm always going to be single, then we have to make up a different why. I don't know where you're headed with that, but you know, like that's a good why, is that you don't want to train yourself to please yourself because that's not what sex is. Like, it's about her. So you might not have a her yet, but if you're training yourself now, you're hardwiring circuitry in your brain that goes to paths. And dude, like, you know, we're talking about men, but dude, women have these problems too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, women have issues with lust, you know, and that's a, you know, I mean, that's not a topic I know how to help them with, but you know, this is something that, like, I feel like people need to have these conversations early on in their relationship and talk about it. And I think that'll help. But if you're in a spot where you're single and you're doing your thing your way, great. I want to encourage you, don't fund or participate in an industry that supports raping children, that supports enslavement and trafficking of women, that creates an unhealthy picture of what sexuality is. Like, you know, it should never be degrading. It should never be painful. It should never be, you know, the things that you see. Like, that's unacceptable and that's not healthy. And so your why would be to make sure that you can not support that, for one thing, but also, you know, think about what your future might entail and where you might be headed with your life. Do I want to give myself problems in the future relationship that I might have for the sake of a quick, you know, mm-hmm. 2 to 5 minute, I don't know, you know, trip, you know, that, and it's not worth it, but you've got to find your why. I hope that maybe some of that might help you find a why, mm-hmm. but that's what I would tell that guy in your shoes.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can definitely hear in your voice just how, like, this has personally impacted you. And that's something I think a lot of guys need to hear. So I really appreciate you sharing your story, Josh. I honestly don't think a lot of men, especially young men, men in their 20s, men in their teens, I don't think they realize the effects it has. I mean, not just even the relationship, but like losing your job. That's something that, I mean, there's so many ways that it can ruin your life. And because it's the exact same thing as drug use. You know, for me, and I mentioned this on our episodes on pornography, it became less about lust and the fact that since I started viewing it when I was 11, 12, 13, whatever it was, I just became the habit of, oh, I'm stressed out, boom, look at porn. Now I feel good, you know, get that dopamine. And it became that anytime, and even now, like I've said before, anytime I get stressed out, I get that urge. And it's just like, nope, okay, you know, gotta redirect, gotta realize that, okay, it's just a bad feeling, you know, stress is normal, things like this. You can use stress in good ways, but it's good to hear the story of, you know, how you basically kind of got radical about what you were doing. And you made a lot of big changes. And also the fact that, you know, unfortunately, just because we're human, it's never going to be perfect. But that's really what makes us strong. I forget who it was. I want to say it was one of the earliest Christian saints who was talking about, it's better that a man go through life with great temptation and face it than a man go through life without having any issues, you know, problems with a certain thing, you know. And it could be, you could say that about courage, you could say that about whatever it may be, but it's better that you're going to be falling, it's better that you're going to be, you know, the guy that's running and jumping over the hurdles and trips every time but gets back up, because that's really what's going to make you strong. It's what's going to make you learn these lessons. And at the end of the day, realistically, you know, like Brian, myself, Josh, anybody else, you know, Ryan Mickler, Brett McKay, all these guys, we could tell you all these things, but unless you really go out there and try for yourself, you're probably not going to get the best experience in life, because that's really what it's about. You know, this isn't just hopefully an entertainment thing for you, but if you're really trying to become better, you know, you need to put the work and you need to put, you know, the muscle to the metal, and that's when things are going to hopefully begin to improve in your life, whether it's about porn or other, you know, other things you're working on improving.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, you know, when you conquer one thing, a lot of times if you don't get to the root of it, sometimes you end up transferring it to another, you know? And so I know with me, like you talked about that stress. So yeah, for me, it was totally that. The stress was, it helped treat that. Right. And then it went to food. I just transferred one addiction for another for years. And, you know, and I still, you know, like I said, I lost weight, but I still fight that one, you know?
Yeah.
And the good thing is that I love this concept too. Like, guess what? We're all broken and messed up. We all are. Like I don't care what self-help guru is trying to tell you how much better your life is going to be if you follow them. dude, we're all screwed up and broken people, mm-hmm. every one of us, and that's okay. I mean, we should all strive to be better. We have to take responsibility. We have to make steps. But like, you know, I've got some pretty, I don't know, I've always been friends with like the rebels and the rogues. Like when I was in middle school, I was bullied pretty bad, so I had to fight a lot. This was back, this was back before you were born. And you could still punch a bully in the face if he pushed uh-huh. you around or not. You know, you could still stand up for yourself before the zero tolerance policies were invented.
Gosh, yeah. Yeah, I remember my dad, I had a bully too, and he was like, here, I'll take you guys to a park. You can fight it out, and I'll just watch from the car.
But I remember being bullied, and I remember going through that concept, and it was like, you know, it sucked. And I ended up like, nobody was going to stop you from standing up for yourself, or, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like that, but the stoners and the scummers, right, all like saw me getting bullied, and they're like, hey, this kid's not that bad. Like, what's the deal? So they all like kind of stepped in and like accepted me as one of their own. And, you know, I have never touched a joint in my entire life. You know, I think I've had a sip of alcohol to be polite one time, you know, like as an adult, you know, and you know, and these guys just like welcomed me in because they're like, hey, this is, we got his back, you know? And I think it might've had more to do with my dad, being kind to them outside of school. I don't know what it was, but they were good to me. And so, I guess I've just always kind of like grown up with this mindset that like, you know, like I've always been kind of drawn to the rebels and the rogues and the troublemakers, you know, but like, I don't care who you are, man. We've all got value, you know, don't just strive to be the best, like strive to be the best that you can be and bring people along with you. And don't think that just because somebody else's life is a mess, that there isn't good in them, you know, like, some of my best friends, man, like they've got issues. And fortunately, I've had the opportunity to overcome some of those issues so I can help them. And some of them have overcome some issues that I need help with. And like, I think that that's part of what happens too. We talked earlier about that social distancing and isolation that we as men go through. Like, we totally will like wall up and either be alone or just attach ourselves to men that are like us. Right? Like, dude, expand your social circle. Go hang out with somebody that's a different race and be humble enough to listen to what they're saying their experiences are. Go hang out with somebody that doesn't believe the same thing you do and find out why they believe what they do. Go hang out with somebody that has a drug problem. You know, I'm not saying you have to like trust them or welcome them into your deepest, you know, circles or tell them everything or, you know, feed their drug habit by giving them, you know, $20 every week. I'm just saying, hang out with people different than you who have a different experience and a different journey, because that's where we really can see, like, honestly, like I've seen myself in those moments, you know, like I know myself better when I can see that somebody else is broken like I am, you know, I don't know, just a thought.
No, that's good.
Yeah. That may be a good place to wrap up the show.
You know, I've been in some pretty low places in my life, and just thinking about your examples there, I don't know if I would hang out with people like me that were like me like 5-10 years ago. And but I think that you make a good point. You got to give those people a chance, because you know, everyone's broken. Everyone can grow. Maybe some men are just looking for a good friend that can lift them up.
You do have to make sure that you're healthy, that you're strong, that you're going in the right direction, because like, especially like, you know, let's say that you had like, if you had a friend that has a drinking problem, you used to have a drinking problem, you can help him, but you also don't want to go down the path if it's going to drug you back in. So you have to kind of, you know, meet on some neutral ground rather than to go into the kind of territory that's going to drag you back if that's an issue for you. But definitely like I have friends that should never step foot in a bar again. You know what I mean? You know, they should never set foot in there, because if they do, their life is going to go down the tubes again. But you know what? They could go to an AA meeting and hang out with the drunks. Do you know what I mean? Even though they might not need it right now, their life is good and they're not tempted. But by going and being that friend to these guys that need it, they can help. You know, that's I guess part of my point is like, and you might find that you need some help with something else that they're going through too. You know, like don't be so cocky to think you have it all together, because I know I don't.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's really one of the things I think that is a sign of maturity is recognizing your own brokenness, or I guess in modern parlance, recognizing the fact that you suck a lot, and that you're probably always going to suck, but that you can always suck a little bit less. And whether that's, you know, you do it, it goes back to kind of what you were saying about finding your why. Whether you're gonna, you know, suck a little bit less for your family, for, you know, for your community, for your church, for people you work with, or just for, you know, the random person. Because I think that's something that a lot of people, getting back to my qualms with like the self-improvement machine, a lot of people will do it for themselves and that's about it. And they don't realize that, you know, they can have a lot of impact on other people if they just put themselves in front of them or walk alongside them. You know, they don't need to go out there and give speeches. They don't need to start a podcast. They don't need to go out there and write a book, especially if they're just trying to do it for purely selfish motives. But as we get better, and Brian, this is like something you and I kind of realized, you know, because you and I were at a lot of different places many years back, and I think we've grown in so many ways, just even before doing this podcast, but also while we're doing it, you know, realizing that we can share, however imperfectly, the things we've learned in life, and provide insight for men that, you know, are at a specific place in life, but also have these conversations like with you, Josh, who are at a different place in life, who's been through different experiences, although some similar ones as well, and really have a great, you know, way to learn from people. Because I think like conversations like this, like I've come away just filled with so much just inspiration, some different knowledge. It's great learning because, like, I don't know anybody that lives up in basically blue-collar Pennsylvania country. I'm an accountant. I'm a white-collar guy. I currently live in the middle of, you know, not in the middle of a city, but, you know, in a very urban area, and I'm moving out to a rural country in the next couple of weeks. But, like, you know, it's still very different, you know, from, like, just kind of what I've grown up in, you know, and things like this. That's what makes these conversations great. And I really hope that for all the audience members out there that you guys find this as well.
Yeah, I liked what you said, Josh, at the beginning about not taking things too seriously. I feel like I could take that advice a little bit. I think everyone likes to laugh, but it can be challenging at times. You know, you're trying to grow to be a virtuous man, and just looking at what's going on in the world and saying, like, I suck, everyone sucks, like, everything sucks. Like, this is, like you were saying earlier, Steven, it's very easy to be a sourpuss, maybe I just need to get some more dad jokes in my life.
Definitely. Or the other thing you can do is I said, my wife does not agree with me on this. But I say, everything is funny. You know what I mean? Like if you really think about it, like even like the worst possible timing and the worst possible scenario, if you really think about it, there's a joke in there. There is something to laugh at there. And like, you might have to laugh quietly to yourself or go in the bathroom and, you know, turn the bathroom fan on so that you can let that laugh out. But, you know, was it the Bare Naked Ladies song that says, I'm the kind of guy that laughs at a funeral? Yep. You don't understand what I mean? Well, you soon will. And, you know, we could sing that whole song. That'd be good. I don't know how that works, but just, you know, don't be afraid to find humor in it. You know, like I'm telling you what, if you can't watch the news right now at who's running for president on both sides of this and find something funny about it, like, come on. Like it is, it's like the destruction of this great land and it's hilarious. You know, like it's okay. Just let it, you know, there's funny stuff everywhere. And honestly, like do something you like to do. That's the other thing about that. I know we're kind of wrapping things up, but you know, this is something I think that a lot of men will forget about. Like there are things you like to do, right? There are things that make you feel alive. Things that are fun. You know, some of my friends love to shoot guns, and when they're shooting guns, they feel alive. Some of my friends like to go hunting in the woods, or some of my friends like to play video games for a little bit. You know, some of them too much. You know, some of them like to ride their motorcycle. I don't know, man. Some of them like to play chess. But whatever your thing is that makes you feel alive, take some time to do that, because life is too short to not enjoy it a little bit, you know?
Right.
I feel like that's only just scratched the surface of, I think, what we were planning on in this conversation, to be honest. You know, Josh, we're really going to have you on again, because this has been just such a fun conversation. I really mean fun. I don't know if I would have said that word had we not said it about 100 times tonight, but I think it's been a pleasure. We really, really do appreciate it. Now, I know I'll probably put you on the spot and ask you all the places people can connect with you. We're just going to put that in the show notes, unless you would like to plug anything else. I know you got your website, manlyhood.com. You on social media?
That's a great place to start.
That is probably the best place to start, honestly. But we'll make sure you're covered. Anything else you want to plug while you're on right now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I've actually, if you go to manlyhood.com and you click on the Get Started link, you'll see there's a place you can download like a book of 500 chunks of manly wisdom. And it's just, you know, quotes that I think are helpful. I love to kind of direct people there, because quotes are something I love. Like, I don't care whether it was, you know, who it was that said it. If it's good wisdom, it's good wisdom, you know? So there's, you know, a quick little ebook you can get there for free. But then you can also sign up. I have a Facebook group called the Manlyhood Man Cave, where a lot of the guys will go and we will, you know, I ask questions, we'll post stuff, we'll share about stuff. And it's cool, because it's really, the guys have really started to kind of gel, and they always welcome new guys in. And it's a great place where I can give you so much, but I got a whole army of guys who are willing and ready to talk to you about anything you need to talk about. So that's been kind of a cool experience seeing that grow. And I've got a podcast too, which what's called the Manlyhood Mancast. Again, you can find that at the website. And, you know, we should resume this conversation. Maybe we could have you guys come on my podcast sometime and
pack
some things.
That'd be great.
So, yeah.
That sounds great. That'd be a lot of fun. So also make sure you're giving him a rating and review on I'm guessing your podcast is on all places podcasts can be found, like Apple and stuff.
Yes, as well as on YouTube. So if you want to watch
Wonderful.
And see my goofy face, you're certainly welcome to do that as well.
Do we get to see that bear painting?
Yeah, I think the bear painting is in a few episodes. I've got some of the newer stuff I've done in my living room, which I recently did in all reclaimed lumber, which is kind of a fun project. So
nice. I will have to check that out. That sounds like something that I would love to do, and my wife would probably hate if I did it, but we'll get to that
my
point
wife
at some point.
Very patient with me. I mean, if it was her way, it would probably be like mauve and flowers and wicker baskets. So I'm like, no, we're gonna go like, remember that old chicken coop we tore down? That's going on the walls, baby. So
there you go.
You are giving me a lot of ammunition to use in our new home, my friend. I look forward to having this conversation with my wife. But we really did. We had such a great time. I had such a great time with you, Josh. We are looking forward to having a conversation on your podcast again, and then maybe even bringing you back on or doing some future collaborations. But definitely check out all the places he mentioned. They're going to be below in the show notes. You can learn a little bit more about Josh. But I'm sure all of you guys found just this conversation to be insightful, as we did. So that will wrap things up for the Vital Masculinity podcast and another interview that we've done. And just to keep things simple, and like we always do, you should always remember that virtue makes the man. Have a good one, gents.